Onondaga, or People of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR Reviving Ganasadage Radio.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Pledge resistance!
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal, here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
By the Matrix, and did white people root allegations, right? I took my crew on vacation. I cried to Abuja, amazed them. Now they go do DNA shit. Most of y'all hoping you are from Lagos. Used to hope we were cool like Jamaicans. Bobbing cool cause I grew up with Haitians. Mama wanna seduce my relations. Back in the beat, the Badoon I was raising. Who you thought about you out to Salem? Churches told me that you are from Satan. Cowboys in blue and they're still in my basins. They my crew like the new kind of Masons. Yeah, look at our planet, I have my hand in. Look at I got these niggas acting up. Something in the land where niggas run the planet. And everybody packing up. Riding through Atlanta, when I gotta vanish, I just take the 85 to Africa. I just take the 85 to Africa. I just take the 85 to Africa. Look at our planet, I have my hand in. Look at I got these niggas acting up. Something in the land where niggas run the planet. And everybody packing up. Riding through Atlanta, when I gotta vanish, I just take the 85 to Africa. I just take the 85 to Africa. Go hard job, baby, just back it up. Do it sound like a new conversation? We still talking about Jewish and Asians. Talking how to improve our relations. Now with day nigga, who got the patience?
My city sleeping, they sleeping. It ain't no secret, they be dreaming. They always dreaming. But what's the reason when I need them? They don't believe it. That's why I'm leaving. Yeah, I'm peacing for something decent. Now, homie, peep this. It's not like I don't care for my tan, but when my tape drops, it seems like ain't nobody around. Regardless, I be chopping it down. But when that tree falls, it never makes an audible sound. So I put my axe down across the border. Now everything that I thought of is getting made as an order. I'm getting paid, I'm supposed to try and spread the love around. Don't wanna see me shine, so they'll probably try and shut me down. But tell them, wake up. Everybody in my city needs a pay cut. Say what? I feel like we can conquer the game. It starts with a change, but seemingly it's always the same. So
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening, joining us all the way from Halifax, Nova Scotia, is Andre Fenton, an award-winning African Nova Scotian author, spoken word artist, and arts educator who has represented Halifax at 7 national poetry festivals across Canada. He was a 2015 recipient of the Spirit of the Slam Award. Andre is an author of 2 YA novels, Worthy of Love, which won bronze in the Coast Best Of, and was selected for In the Margins annual fiction recommendation list to highlight best fiction and nonfiction titles focused on youth populations living in marginalized existences. He is also the author of Anaka, that was shortlisted for the Anne Corner Bremer Award for Atlantic Canadian Children's Literature in the 2021 Atlantic Books Awards. Through the lens of fiction and poetry, Andre has facilitated workshops at over 30 schools across Nova Scotia, helping young writers and performers develop their craft. He is currently working on his 3rd novel, The Summer Between Us, and a feature screenplay. As I said, Andre is based in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Andre, thank you so much for joining us this evening. How you doing,
thank
brother?
Thank you for having me, Cam. I'm excited to be here, you know. It's been a while since we connected.
Oh, God. It's been almost a decade. 2 more years and it would have been a decade.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild to me. And it's kind of like where it all began,
yeah.
I think, with everything that happened.
Coming full circle. Yeah. We can let the people know about that history. But first of all, you know, Happy New Year, you know. All the best and all the good stuff, you know. We are still kind of in this pandemic-y situation. I mean, is it ending? Is it still going? That's still a question. But the past 2 years have been interesting, we'll say. How has it been for you?
For me, it's been a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of Zoom meetings. I was working on my new book during that time, which was honestly, I'm always the type of person where I can't really write at home. I need to like be somewhere in a coffee shop, somewhere where I can just kind of just focus. But I think during all of that, I learned I was a really big night person. I wrote my newest book mostly at nighttime because things were quiet. I could focus. Couldn't hear any traffic outside. Mm-hmm. Couldn't hear like any neighbors or anything. But I found that a lot. And I think for me, a big transition was not working in the schools, but being like a visitor through Zoom and being either on a giant screen in their classroom or having like big giant Zoom meetings with like 30 different screens when the kids were at home and stuff. So that was interesting to navigate. Honestly, for the most part, things went pretty smoothly. I feel like if I was trying to, you know, navigate all this stuff like a year or two ago, I would feel like I'd be super lost. But I think I'm getting the hang of Zoom and virtual callings, Google Meets and all that jazz.
Yeah. Well, we adapt, right? Like that's the nature of human beings just throughout life. We adapt to every situation that we come across. So, you know, and especially young folks, I think like a lot of people were concerned about children and masks and wearing masks. And I'm just like, I'm not concerned about them at all, because if they see the adults continuously wearing masks, they're going to be like, oh, this is normal. This is how we're supposed to be. You know, it's not going to be like, oh my God, why is this weird? Some of them might resist it in the beginning, but then they'll just be like, oh yeah, this is just a part of our life. So if some aliens landed, they'll be like, why aren't you wearing masks? You're supposed to wear a mask here.
And I find, it's so funny just kind of like walking out and about, because Halifax is a very small city.
Right.
Like, the 6 degrees of separation is more like 2 degrees of separation here.
Right.
Like, you see people, but you don't recognize anyone with masks on and stuff. So
oh, really?
Like, you're just kind of just, like, walking, like, who's that? But then you just kind of wave back and assume the best, the best of the scenario.
You know, the irony for me is I recognize anybody that is someone that I've known since before the pandemic, I recognize them. I'm always, like, a friend of mine, Pamela King, I saw her in the metro, had on a mask and everything, and I was like, I stopped, I looked at her, she didn't see me, but I was like, I kind of was just like, kind of angled off, I was like, Pamela! And she turned around, and I was like, okay, I got it right, so, and then I moved towards her, and she didn't recognize me at all. I don't know, it's interesting, because I don't recognize workmates that I just met at work if they take off their mask. Because their eyes are completely different from how my brain perceives the rest of their face to be. So when they take off their mask, I'm like, who are you? So I definitely wouldn't recognize them. But anybody that I knew before, I've always recognized. So I don't know. That's interesting. That's interesting. Because it made me realize how important the eyes are to my perception of someone. So if I see you, even if you change your hairstyle, even if you did something different, you know, you have on a hat or something like that, and you don't normally wear a hat, I'll still recognize you. So that's interesting.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So yeah, you mentioned in the beginning that you're kind of coming full circle in that you're back here in Montreal doing an interview. I obviously know the story, but would you like to elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, of course. So this is kind of where I find my writing career kind of really jumped. I always knew I wanted to be a writer growing up. I always write really outrageous short stories about, like, aliens attacking my city and what I would do in these situations. But when I got to grade 12, I had this course, African Canadian Literature, which when we got to a poetry unit, we weren't reading poetry from books, but we were, my teacher, Malik Adams, he brought in this TV and a DVD player into the classroom, and we watched the first couple of seasons of Def Jam Poetry. And I was like a young writer at the time, thinking like, yo, this is so exciting. And I was always the shyest kid in the room, but something told me like, yo, I got to try this. So I started writing poetry. I started hanging out at this hip-hop studio by my school with these rappers that were, like, all way cooler than me. Until one day, Elle Jones came to the studio, and she was like, yo, you gotta check out this poetry slam. I had no idea what a poetry slam was, but we went to this poetry slam, and it was my first time performing. I had my notebook, covered my face the entire time. I was really nervous, but it wasn't so bad. Turns out I came third place in my first ever poetry slam. Hey. I thought that was pretty cool. And afterwards, they were like, by the way, the top five poets that place are going to represent Halifax at the Canadian Festival of Spoken Word in Montreal. Yep. And I was kind of just like, whoa, I really fell into this face first. And so I found that summer, the journey to Montreal was really hectic. We actually didn't know until like a couple weeks prior if we were actually going or not. And by the time that came around, I realized like, yo, I have no place to stay. I was like, just like an 18-year-old, just kind of like totally bit off way more than I could chew.
Right.
And Elle Jones connected me with you.
Yeah.
And yeah, you let me stay at your place. And yeah, I definitely learned a lot. It was my first time getting out of Nova Scotia, and it was really dope to connect with you and just totally like remember you showing me around the city. I felt like the little brother at the time, just kind of like, yo, this is a big world. Like I had never been outside Nova Scotia prior to then, but definitely was in really good company. definitely lots of fun stuff. I was actually, my first time on the subway was with you. We were running towards, I remember we had all this luggage and we almost missed it. We got on just on time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a really great experience. My first time at the Canadian Festival of Spoken Word. And I went to a few others after that. And met so many amazing poets. It totally just opened up my world and just kind of like showed me like, yo, like poetry, spoken word is deep. And I just couldn't get enough of it at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was the Canadian Festival of Spoken Word. That's one of the things I love about it, is that it connects people from all over this nation, Canada, who have this similar interest and similar love for spoken word poetry. I mean, that year as well, a bunch of poets and a bunch of artists banded together to bring Elle over from Halifax, which was a part of the reason why we all just connected, because Elle ended up coming over in order to support y'all's team from Halifax, and then she ended up asking me, you know, to if she had a young brother that was coming over, can we figure something out to put him up? And I was like, I had a tiny bachelor, I had a pull out couch, and I was just like, yo, whatever you need, just if he needs to, it's a tiny place, but you know, we'll make it work, we'll make it happen. You know, I had to go to work, and you had free reign, just let you know where to go, how to get to wherever you needed to go to, and yeah, make it happen. No, man, that was a pleasure for me to host you and to allow you to like to facilitate allowing you to experience this. I think it's an important experience for anyone, and to know that it was like your first time going in the slam and you qualified, like that's I'm blessed to have been able to be a part of that history. And now you've come full circle. Like, it's so rare that I hear someone, especially someone as young as you are, say, oh yeah, you know, I've always wanted to be a writer. That's not a conversation that I've ever had. Even myself, I'm like, I fell into spoken word and I fell into poetry. It wasn't something that I read books and I was like, oh, you know, I really want to become a poet. Oh, it's just something that kind of happened organically. It never occurred to me that, oh, I might be writing plays and I might be writing books and stuff like that in the future. But how did you figure out that you wanted to be a writer? Like, what was the aha moment that just went, oh yeah, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Well, I guess in a way, I was always kind of a journal kid. I had so many journals growing up where I was just kind of writing super, super outrageous short stories. I would write these like scripts for stop motion animations I wanted to make with my Transformers toys when okay. I was like 9. And yeah. It was, you know, just had like a big imagination, but I think definitely it toned down a bit over time. I no longer so big on like the saving the world ideas. Now I'm more kind of into writing those coming of age stories and those stories of just, you know, finding the best parts of yourself. I grew just a big passion towards that. I didn't realize that was where I was going to end up, but a few national poetry festivals later, I was working on a book. The working title was called What Are You Eating? And over time, that translates to my first book, Worthy of Love. Mm-hmm. And it was such a great experience, because for me, it was, it felt very healing to be able to write a story about a young Black man struggling with topics like body image and eating disorders, because it's not something we see every day. And no. I never realized that was a type of representation is really important until I actually started getting into schools and into classrooms. And for a minute, I kind of viewed writing that as a healing process, but I realized over time, like, this is also helping a lot of young people deal with their issues or feel like they don't fit in a certain box in society where they can be vulnerable, but it's been helping kind of break those barriers as well. And I'm very grateful to to have written that. And I don't think I could have written that without kind of a poetry or spoken word background, because mm-hmm. it really helped improve my writing a lot just by meeting different storytellers, having really great mentors like Elle, Rebecca Thomas, meeting you. It had been such, I'm so filled with so much gratitude for being able to travel the country at such a young age and to explore so many different styles and meet so many different writers.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you mentioned Elle Jones, and I obviously mentioned her in reciprocity. We gotta talk a little bit about Elle, because to me, Elle is like poetry royalty in Canada. And we have to talk about Halifax as well. You know, I'm sure there are people out there who know, but Halifax is the bed of Black African history in Canada. It's like one of the first, if not the first, Black community in Canada, official Black community award. Like, the, I believe it was Queen Victoria gave the, and please do forgive me if I mess up the history, but it was the Maroons from Jamaica that fought in one of the many wars, and they were given this plot of land in Halifax. And so it was one of the first black communities in Canada, mm-hmm. and the discrimination was just like mm-hmm. off the charts, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's definitely a lot of deep issues around that, you know, specifically in Nova Scotia. And we've seen that through the last couple of years in so many different ways. Like, we've seen the, like, you must have been reading a lot of our local stories with, like, street checks specifically, how big of an issue that was. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up and being like a young Black teenager, just kind of like walking down the roads and just kind of being stopped for no reason. People at, like, officers asking where I'm going, what am I doing outside? And I could just be like walking home. Like, and that kind of happened to me around the same time that I started kind of writing, and I was writing that about those experiences a lot. And, yeah, it's, it is kind of, sorry, I'm still kind of, my mind's kind of boggling right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. And Elle Jones was the Poet Laureate for Halifax?
Yeah, Elle Jones was the Poet Laureate. I met her shortly before she became the Poet Laureate, and she was kind of like, she was such a great mentor to have. Well, she is such a great mentor to have, mm-hmm. and just like such a gem in our community. Definitely, I remember the day she became Poet Laureate. It was the same day of my high school graduation, and I was lucky enough to just kind of get my high school diploma and just kind of like run out and go see her become the Poet Laureate. I was lucky enough to perform at the ceremony, which was very cool. And, you know, it's just kind of like, I feel like my career definitely starts with Elle. In mm-hmm. so many ways. Like, if I never met Elle Jones, I wouldn't have went to that poetry slam. I wouldn't be able to travel. I wouldn't have met you. Everything would have been delayed by at least a year, and who knows what would have happened. Because honestly, life is just one big chain reaction of events. And I feel like that was a defining moment in my life, and she really kind of helped pave the way for me to really kind of find the best parts of myself. And I am so forever thankful for her guidance, her light, and just everything she gave me. Definitely, it felt like it was like one of those opportunities that if I didn't take in the moment, I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
Yeah. I totally understand that. It's one of those kind of things that, what if this never happened? You know, the Marvel What If series, where it's like, oh man, my life would have taken a total different turn if this person or this moment in time never happened. I've looked back at my life and I said, like, what if my dad never told me to go and apply for theater school? Like, what would my life be like right now? You know, I think I would probably be an architect, and I'd probably have fuck ton of money or something like that. Whoops, sorry. Sorry, folks, I shouldn't have said that like that. But, yeah, I'd probably be in a totally different kind of mode. And it's amazing how people who are important to you and people who are an influence to you, they just drop one... what's that thing? Just one tiny drop of water in the pond and, like, ripples. There's a ripple effect all the way to the edges of it. Just in case you're tuning in to for the first time, we are speaking to Andre Fenton, an award-winning African Nova Scotian author, spoken word artist, and arts educator who has represented Halifax all across Canada in multiple national poetry festivals. We do have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
You can't allow it, cause baby, whether you're high or low, or whether you're high or low, you got to chip on the tightrope, chip on the tightrope, baby, baby, whether you're high or low, baby, whether you're high or low, you got to chip on the tightrope. Now let me see you do the tightrope, and I'm still dipping on it. See, I'm not walking on it or trying to run around it. This ain't no acrobatics. I'll keep on blaming the machine. And now I'm talking about it. Talking about it. I can't complain about it. I gotta keep my balance and just keep dancing on it. We getting funky on the scene, and you know about it. Like a star on the screen, watch me tip all on it. Now, baby, whether I'm high.
That I wouldn't do, I did them. Secrets below the surface, the truth, I hit them. It's mankind, it's past, it can erase. Tears of a million years, this human race of animals that talk and walk upright. The slave all day and fall into trance at night. Growing the planet, trying to find missing links like the men we used to be and are we supposed to think? Mysteries, maybe not. It's getting hot, we better configure the plot. But I hold a pen with the grip so tight that I squeeze the ink down to the page and write a song for the people. Came up from the underground, now I ride above on a hovercraft. A sound, this microphone like an amphetamine, keeping me clean, speaking in dreams so nature can intervene. It's all received.
I tried it, I couldn't fight it. Now I just wanna get back to me. Oh, baby. Babylon falling this year. Babylon and Babylon are falling. Babylon's falling. Babylon's falling. See, most of us can't realize our world on this earth. See, down present man a capitalize. They give you peace of the pie. They close on the eye. See, this can maintain. Some things are too strange. We need our seed to grow against the grain. Yeah.
There ain't nobody around here that's ordinary. Baby, I'm extraordinary. We walk through that pillar square and broken glasses everywhere. People pissing in the stairs, they hang their head down in despair. We are here, they can feel it in the air. We are here, we are so extraordinary. Round the way that did
appear some debutantes and debonairs. Well, at least that's what it seemed till we shot clouds up in the air. We are rare, mama told us we are rare. We are rare, we are rare, we were born extraordinaire, extraordinaire. Extraordinaire, we the best, my nigga, extraordinaire.
Now Cara Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Cara Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Cara Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. On the air with us this evening, we're speaking to Andre Fenton, who has facilitated workshops at over 30 schools across Nova Scotia, helping young writers and performers develop their craft. And he has taken a particular interest in writing youth-oriented fiction. So before the break, when you were telling us about your work and what you do, you spoke about how healing it was to write your first story, Worthy of Love, which was originally called What Are You Eating? And it deals with a young black man who's dealing with eating disorders. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because that is absolutely not something that we hear about in our community at all. And at least not because what people don't know is that an eating disorder is actually a mental health disorder or mm-hmm. mental health illness. So like, what made you decide to tackle that issue in your first novel? I mean, that's a serious issue. It's a big issue to tackle.
Yeah.
And with men too. So mm. and with like a male, like usually you'd hear women talk about that, but not men.
Yeah, definitely. When I first started writing this book, I was honestly really nervous because growing up I was always a bigger kid, and I had a lot of issues about body image and kind of thinking, worrying too much about what other folks saw me at the time. But the weird thing about growing up is once you get to a certain age, you kind of realize a lot of things we were worried about in high school, we won't really take with us until we grow up. But I still want to validate those feelings I was feeling back then, because they were really honest, vulnerable, and they were impacting me in a huge way. When I started writing Worthy of Love, I knew I wanted to delve into that topic of eating disorders, because those were issues that I faced for a long time. I had a weight loss journey myself, and I kind of took a lot of different ways, some healthy, not so healthy, but I felt like it was an issue that I felt like I was going through very much alone, and I felt like kind of navigating this world as a young black man, I couldn't express myself and talk about those type of things. So one thing I promised myself is like, if I'm going to write this book, I'm going to be very vulnerable about it. I'm going to be very honest. I'm going to write in a way where this is both healing and educational. And I'm really going to, I felt like I couldn't write this book unless I really delve deep into the topic of masculinity in young black men as well. Mm-hmm. And really kind of looking at that through a different approach about topics that we think we should write about, talk about, or topics we feel like we can't talk about. And I just really kind of threw all those expectations out of the window and decided just to be very honest. The character, the protagonist of the novel, his name is Adrian. And like I was saying earlier, this book was originally called What Are You Eating? But over time, this turned into a story about self-love and learning to love yourself regardless of what a scale says, and mm-hmm. finding that community and other folks who will help you through your journey, whatever that may be. And that's why it turned into Worthy of Love. Mm-hmm. And I remember 2 weeks before this book came out, I was thinking like, yo, nobody's gonna read this. I was really nervous, but
right,
everybody loves it. Well, I shouldn't say it like that, but like, it got into a lot of classrooms, which I'm very proud of. And for me, one of the things that really stuck out was knowing that it made that in the margins recommendation list. It won bronze in the Coast Best Of, and it was and I got to make a platform for topics that don't get spoken of very often. Currently just finished writing my sequel to Worthy of Love called The Summer Between Us. When I finished Worthy of Love, I deeply, deeply fell in love with the characters of that novel, and I didn't want to let them go just yet. So I pitched the story for a really beautiful sequel. And I will say, writing a sequel is so hard.
sequels are difficult because it's like the first story, you get it right as much as possible. And then the second story is like, where do you go from here? And you know, there's always that sequel curse, especially in cinema, whereby how are we going to do it better the second time? And usually it doesn't get done much better the second time in a lot of sequels. Sometimes it takes the third time for them to get it right. But yeah, I can imagine that it was quite a test. So how was it?
I think the key for me was, it took a long time for me to kind of look at this as, yo, I have to stop writing this as a sequel. I have to start writing this as the love letter and a send off to the character I've been writing about since I was like 16 years old.
Wow.
And that really helped me find the points, really helped me find the character arcs of this story that flow through. And, gosh, I get so emotional even talking about this book because when I was writing these characters of both Adrian and Mel, I really fell in love with them in so many different ways, and I got to grow with them as I was writing their characters. And goodbyes are hard, even for the authors. And definitely The Summer Between Us is a really, really heartfelt novel that I wrote with a lot of love and handled with a lot of care. I'm very excited for that.
So let's get back to the first book a little bit. How did you, because I haven't picked it up yet, but I will. How did you blend blackness with something as like impactful as an eating disorder? Mm-hmm. Like how did you find that blended and meshed together in your story?
I just brought my truth to the table with it. I brought my experience with race intersecting with just kind of like, just kind of in that coming of age story feeling. I really delved deep into a lot of the issues that I dealt with when I was in high school and junior high regarding race, like people not treating me seriously in some events when I went to like a punk show and everyone was asking if I was the guy, that just kind of thought I was a drug dealer at the punk show just because I was there. And it's just kind of like, you know, I delved deep into those scenarios, kind of brought them to life. And even like topics like, yo, people just coming and trying to grab your hair or like feeling your hair and stuff like that. Like, I remember those things happening a lot when I was growing up. And, you know, I mean, that stuff kind of like, those people that do that will grow into adults that think it's okay to do that too. But definitely knew the dynamics of this novel were going to be difficult to speak of and really kind of find a home, because it was wearing so many different hats and it had so many different intersections. I thought like I was worried where I was going to end up, but definitely found that it was kind of a beacon to for folks to feel included, for inclusivity. When I was speaking at a school, there was a teenager there who was reading this book that felt like a young man of color was reading this book, and he said like, yo, I finally felt like I found a book that was written for a kid like me. And kind of those type of comments make all of this work worth it, you know? Yeah. And because growing up, I never really had access to too many diverse stories. And being a young writer, I felt it was kind of my responsibility to help kind of change that and to really kind of delve deep into those stories of teenagers finding the best parts of themselves. I'm still a sucker for those stories. I've been watching a lot of Spider-Man, Miles Morales, into the Spider-Verse. And definitely, you know, those stories of just teenagers finding those amazing parts of themselves, knowing that they can overcome. I still carry those life lessons with me, and watching and reading stories like that still give me goosebumps.
I wanted to kind of... Oh man, I hate when this happens. Like, you know, when you have an idea in your head, and then when you get to the point that you're supposed to talk about it, you just go totally blank. Ugh. I don't know why that happens. So you had another book called Anaka. What is that book about?
Oh, so it's Anaka and
Anaka. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. It's so Anaka was. Ever since I was in film school way back in the day, I always wanted to write a story about a young adult and their imaginary friend. Essentially, this book started in so many different forms. It was a film school project. I was writing it on my old computer on a Microsoft Word document. The dynamics used to be completely different of the story. But essentially, it was about a young person, their imaginary friend, overcoming some struggles. And it wasn't really going anywhere at the time, so I shelved it for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I think what kind of brought it back to me was losing my grandmother. I remember I graduated film school, and shortly after I was getting some work on some shows. I had some mentorship stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And me and my grandmother had a really, really big relationship. She just lived up the road from me. And I remember every year on my birthday, she would call me on the phone. She would tell me about the first time she heard my voice.
Wow.
She would say, she called, asked if my mother was okay, and all she could hear was me crying on the other end of the telephone line, and she'd say, like, oh, he has really good lungs. And we do this tradition every year, and when I lost my grandmother, it was very hard for me. And I think for me, when things really hurt the most, it was when my birthday passed and I never got that phone call.
Right.
And I realized, like, yo, I'm never going to get that phone call ever again.
Right.
So I guess the way that I honored my grandmother was writing the story about a young woman named Anaka. She returned to her hometown of Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, after being away for 10 years because her grandfather had passed away. And when she gets back to her hometown, she finds her childhood imaginary friend Clay, who grew up while she was away. And Clay has this ability to take Anaka back in time to old journal entries that she wrote when she was a kid. So Clay would take Anna back in time to moments where she could speak to her grandfather again, and moments where she could kind of unravel family histories. But the story is also about kind of rebuilding relationships to people you haven't seen in such a long time. And in a way, it's kind of an exploration of grief, because for me, that was a really, really hard experience. But definitely, I learned so much about myself and the people around me and my community members. And I learned that everyone around us is temporary, you know, like it or not. So we got to enjoy them while we're here. And acknowledgments of that book, I put my grandmother in there, and that was kind of my love letter to her, and about the relationship that we had. And Anaka and her grandfather have this joke about them being co-pilots throughout the book. And when I was a kid, me and my grandmother, we'd always play this game where after I left her apartment, she could turn her camera over. She could turn her TV channel over to a camera in the lobby of her apartment. I always waved to her. And I remember the last time I seen her, I knew something was different. It had been some time since I seen her, and I knew she was much older. I had been busy because I had been in school, studies, and all that stuff. And yeah. I remember leaving that day, and I remember waving to her through the camera because I knew she was watching on the other side. And you know, I definitely love my grandmother a lot, and I miss her. And in that book was for her.
Wow. You know, I was very close with my grandmother as well. When I moved back to Canada, I stayed with her, and we had always been very close from I was young. And then when I moved back, I was able to have 14 beautiful years with her, and I totally understand that feeling of like something was different. The last time I saw my grandmother, something was different. Mm-hmm. And I saw her on the Monday, and the Friday she was gone. So I totally that resonates with me, man. Because like you just know. It's amazing how, at least for in that particular case, when you're close to someone, you sense that shift in them, and then it's like, oh damn. You know, all the what ifs and all those things come to mind, and you're just like, ooh, how could I have connected even more? Is there something that could have been done? But thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful. Beautiful love letter to your grandmother. I mean, I can't think of a better way to honor someone that you love than to write a book about with the memory of them, keeping their memory alive. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have just been joined us this evening, we are speaking to Andre Fenton, who is an author, a spoken word artist, an arts educator in Halifax. Halifax is the bed of Black Canadian history in Canada. If you don't know, now you know. We do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Take you back to my shrine, and I'ma need the whole night and a little bit more. They don't know how you like it. Tonight like a weekend ago. You in and you out and you playing a fold. We in need of a moment. Are we ever gonna know? You should make up your mind. Take you back to my shrine. Don't you pay them no mind. Let them be, let them go. She was made for my eyes. We escaped the times. And I'ma need the whole night and a little bit more. I made it.
Yo, mince meat, brother. I am on my grind. I got these weak dudes dipping like a limbo line. 514, now's about my time. Words of Dr. Frankenstein. He's screaming I'm alive. And so well, like a bucket and a rope in it. Obama swagger, put the change and the hope in it. Hold the flow down like a news anchor. Do it heavily medicated, so now I'll give him dope music. I'm not a rapper, I'm a general up in the movement. And what I value most, I can never lose it. See, radiation, hardest 5 weeks of my life. And there is no harder other brother on the mic. So I give them what they need, listen what they like. And
When you hear it, it's like riding a bike. You hesitate at first, then remember how it's done. Cause it's classic, but it's fresh, and it's smart, and it's fun.
I made it.
All them awards, give me that worldwide tour, give me that brand new Accord, give me like all that coin. Yeah, you can walk in my shoes, then you just stay for the view. Cause how I see is so cool, I don't see her or you. Irresistible, man, huggable, fluffy with the silly flows, non negotiable, wild and like an animal, out in Istanbul. I'm a bull, staying quiet though, I stay on the low. They can't wait for more, but you got it though. I don't control time, time might control me, but that's for a different time and story. And I'll be just in time to sit and bask in all my glory. Everything I want is mine, to what you got for me. You should just give me that. 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 Give me like all them awards. Give me that worldwide tour. Give me that brand new Accord. Give me like all that coin. I'm a boss, yeah. I want $1 million couches just to rent in. Buy up all my family's houses. Ain't doing it here for fun. I'm a serious one, so what if I don't run? My body good, good, hun. I'm feeling like I'm ready to be hurt. I'm feeling like I'm meant to spread the word. I'm feeling like I finally found my word. I'm feeling like I'm about to run the world. Might be every song.
Yeah.
Bring a whole lot of,
bring a whole lot of,
a ton of bugs. It might be 50 of y'all,
nah,
but there's a ton of us.
Ton of us.
Cold in the winter, ready for summer ball.
Yeah.
Heavy season with a ton of trucks.
Yeah.
A ton of bug. Bring a whole lot of,
a whole lot of,
a ton of bug. Bring a whole lot of, a ton of bug. It might be 50 of y'all, but there's a ton of us. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. Bring another scale.
A crump way too heavy.
Bring another scale.
Damn.
It's too heavy.
Damn.
It's too heavy. My crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale.
Bring it.
It's too heavy. I said bring another scale.
Another one.
My crump is way too heavy. Bring another scale. This is too heavy. This is too heavy. Man, it's too heavy. Bring a whole lot of,
a lot of it.
A ton of bug. It might be 50 of y'all.
50 y'all.
But there's a ton of us.
Ton of
cold in the winter. Ready for summer bug.
Keep it cold, boy.
Heavy season. With a ton of trucks.
Damn.
A ton of bug. Bring a whole lot of, a ton of bug.
Yeah.
Bring a whole lot of, a ton of bug. It might be 50 of y'all.
Uh-huh.
But there's a ton of us.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back once again. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us, we have Andre Fenton, who is based in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Andre, thank you so much for being here, my brother. I am so very happy that I got the chance to bring you on the air and to have this conversation about your work and about your life and about your journey, you know, through spoken word, travel, a literal journey of spoken word from Halifax to Montreal and beyond. And then now Halifax and the history and black experiences and just L. Jones and the Canadian Festival of Spoken Word. Like, you have so many, like, really powerful highlights in your life, and then now you're this author, and you're traveling, and you're an arts educator that goes to different schools, and just so much more. What I find fascinating is that you tackle issues that are personal to you in your work. So before the break, we spoke about the fact that you're one of, if not more, of your characters in your first book, Worthy of Love, are dealing with eating disorders as young black men, which is not something that is spoken of in the community. I mean, I found out that my relationship to food, I stress eat.
So when I'm under a lot of stress, I just shove food down my mouth. And I'm like, sometimes I'm, when I'm going through that stressful period and then I order like a large pizza and then the pizza arrives and within less than an hour, the pizza's done. And I'm like, how did you eat whole freaking pizza with a large French fries? And I'm like, that's stress. That's just my way of coping with stress. And it's not something that men talk about. And it took me a long time to realize it. I realized this in like 2015, 2016. That it was like, oh, this is a thing that I do when I'm like freaking out or stressed out. And you mentioned just kind of vaguely that there was, you dealt with it in some good ways and some bad ways. And if you don't mind, could you talk to us a little bit about that? Because yeah, I think it's important.
100%. When I was growing up, my weight on the scale has always been up and down, and it's still an issue I'm struggling with today. And, you know, growing up, you realize, like, bodies are strange, forever changing, and it's really hard to navigate that. When I was at my biggest as a teenager, I started going to this Taekwondo gym, and I was losing the weight that way. And I met some really great folks. I connected with some really awesome people that motivated me. But I was also, I was like 16 years old, and I was shopping at like stores where they only had really big clothes, and that was really a big impact to my confidence. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know much about healthy foods. I didn't really know much about keeping the weight off. And I would just go to Taekwondo all the time. And but I would always do this thing where I would like weigh myself multiple times a day, which you should never do, because right, weight changes throughout the day. You can gain like 5 pounds in a day that you'll sleep off in the morning.
Right.
But of course, right, being an angsty teenager, I did not understand that. And I would do a lot of very unhealthy things. I would honestly like try to like starve myself. I wasn't eating. I did develop eating disorder while I was doing these exercises, going to the gym, Taekwondo, and it got to the point where I was losing weight way too fast. There was a wow, summer where I had lost 40 pounds, which is not good.
Right.
Yeah, like losing that much weight in 8 weeks is not a good idea. But it was like a nonstop issue that I was dealing with. I would like do a lot of things. I would go to the gym, Taekwondo. I would run laps around my neighborhood up and down the hill. And I was felt like I was really kind of like ruining my body at the time.
Yeah.
Of course, I wasn't thinking about that at the time, but in retrospect. But in the moment, I was more concerned with getting the numbers on the scale down and taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I remember going back to school that September. I was in shape. Everyone was treating me different. People would bully me for my size before. Now, people were like, you know, making rumors about me saying I got liposuction and all this stuff.
Wow.
And yeah, you know, I was just doing really, I wasn't taking care of myself. And being 26 years old now, I'm recognizing that there was a deeper issue around kind of self-love and healing. And I had more self-loathing, self-hatred in my heart than I did have self-love. These days, I find I have more self-love in my heart. Some days are harder than others, but, you know, I do know I have a lot of really great qualities which I love about myself, that I adore about myself. I still struggle with my weight these days, but I'm a bit more patient with myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not as hard on myself as I was before. Definitely is something I struggle with deeply, and a lot of things that I have to unlearn. But I am open, I am patient with myself, and I know that I am able to make the changes, but I understand I don't have to be that kid that was just worried about the numbers on the scale going down as right. I am now. Right now, I'm just kind of focused on like staying healthy, feeling good about myself, both mentally and physically, mm-hmm. and just kind of looking at ways where I can maintain a lifestyle where I feel really good about it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because it's definitely not a conversation that we're having in our community, you know. And did you, a lot of people, I read somewhere, no, I posted something on Facebook whereby, you know, people are always looking at the issue, but they're not looking at the symptoms, or they're not looking at the cause of whatever it is you're going through. Do you kind of realize where your eating disorder came from? Is this something that you've kind of had an exploration in your mind about how did you get to this point?
Well, I've always been an emotional eater. mm-hmm. Like, you know, I eat when I'm stressed. If I'm ever mad at something, I grab like two granola bars, you know. If I yep. was happy, I would, you know, have some snacks for food.
Right.
And it was so, I find it was so integrated with my moods that it was how I navigated feeling things. And that's really hard to unpack and to recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's things, you know, I still got to call myself out on, like, yo, am I eating this because I'm hungry, or am I just, you know, feeling a certain way where I'm just kind of like, this will help this mood pass or something like that,
right.
you know?
Right.
And, yeah, I think for me, that kind of idea was so integrated with myself at such a young age that I kind of grew with it. And, you know, I made mistakes growing up. Not everything I did right, but I don't hold resentment for myself.